removed, the doubts remained. Had he done anything more than give the filthy orcs a foothold from which thousands of rogue bands could launch their incessant ambushes? He tried to think it through, but he could not. For though he was nearly 3 months old, the pestering demands of a body he could hardly control gnawed at his sensibilities, pulling him from his dreams and then his contemplations to more immediate needs. "No," the baby growled, and another memory came to him, washing through him as poignantly as the moment of the experience. He sat on the throne of Gontalgrim, and the wisdom of Moradin, the strength of Clangadin, and the mysteries of Dumathoin all were revealed to him and imparted to him. He was up on his hands and knees then. He tried to curl his toes under to put his feet flat on the floor, but he toppled to the side.
"Ah, but ye finally rolled, did ye?"
he heard his mother say, and then she gasped as Brunner stubbornly forced himself back to his hands and knees.
"Oh, well done!"
Yerwin congratulated.
"Ain't yourself the smart?"
Her voice fell away, for this time Brunner did get his toes properly curled. He felt the power of the throne coursing through his veins, and he pulled himself upright, standing firmly on 2 feet.
"But how'd ye do that?"
Yerwin cried. And she seemed distressed, and only then did Brunner realize that he was pushing it too far and too fast. He looked at her, and took care to paint a look of astonishment, even fear, upon his cherubic, beardless face before falling over to the floor. Yuin was there to grab him up, holding him before her and telling him what a smart and mighty little one he was. Brunner almost formed a word then to tell her that he was hungry, but he wisely remembered his place. Now he had his focus like never before. Now, when he lay in the dark for a nap or the nighttime sleep, Brunner narrowed his always jumbled thoughts more keenly, remembering the throne of the gods, feeling again the blessing of the mighty three. He should have been lying still, perhaps twitching and half-rolling to get more comfortable, but instead, Brunner worked his little fingers and his toes, bent his legs and straightened them repeatedly, and worked his jaw, forming words, remembering words, teaching this new body the patterns of speech. He tried to keep the lingering doubts regarding his previous choices far away, and tried not to even think about the responsibility and oath he had accepted in coming back to this place anew. There would be time for that, years hence, for now, he had to try to simply learn to control this strange body. Still, he was thrown back into those old doubts, and the political morass of who he had once been, one afternoon only a 10 day later, when King Emerus Warcrown and Parson Glaive arrived at the Round Shield house, their expressions grave. Brunner couldn't hear the conversation, for they spoke low to Yuin over by the door. But her sudden cry of denial said it all. King Emerus and Parson Glaive each grabbed her under an arm and helped her in to the table and to a seat.
"He fought as a Round Shield ought," King Emerus assured her. "The orcs were piled around him, braked to bits."
"Aye, a great warrior was Arar," said Parson Glaive.
"Reginald,"
a now composed Yuin corrected.
"Reginald Roundshield, of the Feldbar Roundshields, the son of a son of a son of a captain."
"Aye,"
the other two agreed in unison, and all three turned to regard the baby on the floor, and Brunner felt their sympathy keenly.
"To little Arar, then,"
he heard the King of Feldbar say, but distantly, for Brunner's thoughts were spinning back to Garum's Gorge, to his choice, to his doubts.
"Son of a son of a son of a son of a captain,"
Emerus Warcrown decreed.
"For one day he'll be leading the guard of Felbar, don't ye doubt."
With a spinning jumble of unformed sensibilities, the overwhelming nature of everything in his newborn life, Brunner felt the overwhelming urge to cry roaring up inside of him. But he went into his past, to the throne of the gods, and he denied that. He remembered then that he was the king. Chapter 5. Plain Touched. The Year of the Reborn Hero, 1463 D.R. Delphuntle. Regis walked out of Eruladoon and into the blinding light with sure and determined strides. His resolve was no less than that of Catti Bree, who took this journey as a matter of faith and devotion to her goddess, Mialiki. For Regis, it was the second chance that he dearly, desperately wanted. For so long had he been the tag-along, the one to be rescued instead of the heroic rescuer. He couldn't help but believe that he had ever been the weak link in the chain that formed the companions of the Hall. No more, he decided, not this time around. He was holding Catti Bree's hand, and then he was not. He was in the springtime forest, and then he was not. He was walking, and then he was floating. He was up among the stars, it seemed, with the world, all white and brown and so much blue turning below him, and he felt free, freer than he had ever been in his corporeal days, freer than anything he had ever known. At that moment, swallowed by the celestial spheres, Regis felt as if he could float and swim forevermore and be perfectly content. The world grew larger. That was how he perceived it, until he realized that he was falling, diving back into the sphere of Toril, and he was not afraid. He saw the outlines of the great land of Faerun, of the Sword Coast that he had sailed many times and knew well, of the lands of the Silver Marches, and then an inland sea, a vast great lake with jagged coastlines of jutting peninsulas and long harbors. Into the water he went, and it did not feel to him as if he was swimming or submerged, but rather as if he had joined with the substance, had become as liquid himself, flowing breezily through the wash with barely an effort. He reveled in the journey, excited by the elemental domain. He guessed this to be another gift of Mialiki, because he was unaware of his genetic heritage, unaware that he was venturing the long roots of his rebirth. He expected that his two companions were similarly soaring, but he was wrong, for this was his journey alone, a particular added touch to the halfling he would become. Darkness enveloped him, dark and soft walls pressing against him tightly, holding his arms close to his chest. Still, he felt as if he was deep within the liquid of the inner sea, and his own heartbeat reverberated in his ears. Kathump! No. Not his own heartbeat, he realized to his horror and his comfort all at once. He was in the womb. The heart